Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, okay, caught me napping here a little bit. James Bostic here, Conservative Perspective on Patriot Nation Radio, and it's awesome to get to be here with you. Where are we? Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, it's Tuesday night. I haven't done this in a while, man, and anyway, it's great to be here. This, if it's Tuesday, it has to be the Patriot Nation Radio Network here at Blog Talk Radio, and it's good to be with you. We do it live. Periodically at times, twice a week at least, usually Tuesdays and Thursdays, but that's been open to interpretation here. That's not been a hard, fast rule as it has been in the past. And we have a recorded version that goes on the air over the Mojo 5.0 radio network, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, you should be, because it is some of the very best in conservative and libertarian talk radio, just like what you get here with the fine top-notch programming at Patriot Nation Radio. You've got El Guapo, the handsome one, Mark Hoffman back. He's coming in Thursday with a terrific local government show, school boards, critical race theory. Mark's all over it, and he's going to get it squared away. You can bet on that. And Gary Binford, oh, man, what a superstar. This guy's knocking it out of the park every other Monday. And fantastic stuff that he's doing there with United Patriots Uprising. Well, he's back. That's right. Our friend Michael Cutler returns to us at ACP this evening for a long overdue visit. No spin, no zip. It's not happening here. Nothing but solid truth and more of it behind the immigration / humanitarian disaster that's cascading across our southern border. Who knows what the hell else we'll talk about. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen, our friend, Michael Cutler. Mike, welcome back.
Thank you, James. Thank you so much for having me. It's always a privilege and a pleasure to join you and to be able to speak with you and to address your audience. You do a great job of getting the information out there. And, you know, if knowledge is power, this program empowers all of your listeners.
Kind words, Michael. And while we're on that, I have something I want to say to you. And I had planned this. You kind of stole my thunder a little bit, but last Wednesday, you know, you gave me the registration site for your webinar with Annie Cyrus. And I watched that, and you did your usual top-notch job. And after I got finished admiring the model of the Bell X1 you had on the top of your bookcase, and I started paying attention to what you were saying, and what you were saying is absolutely no different than any phone conversation that you and I have had or when you've been on here. However, you were there, you were looking in the camera, and you were given your information as only you can do it. There weren't any notes because I was watching your eyes. There were no notes, and you had complete control of that. And I just want to say that is a magnificent brain rolling around in that big old skull of yours.
But it makes noise when it rattles. I have to warn you.
It does, but man, when you're hitting on all cylinders, that's it. No, but it was,
I
enjoyed it tremendously.
That Bell X1 was autographed, believe it or not, by guess who?
Well, it's got to be the general. Has to be.
You betcha. And my wife bought that for me as a gift when I had prostate cancer 20 years ago to cheer me up. And she said, I know that this is something that will excite you. And it was funny because she gave it to me on the anniversary of Jaeger breaking the sound barrier. And
awesome.
It put a lump in my throat. And I went out and I bought a model of the P-51 Mustang that he also autographed. And that was the plane that he used to become an ace during the Second World War. Now, the interesting story about Jaeger, the first couple times he went up, he puked all over himself.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lesson for everybody in that. Babe Ruth was the home run king. He was also the strikeout king. And it's about what one of my bosses used to call perseverance. And this old boss of mine was old school. He always wore white shirts. It would be any color you wanted, just like the Model T Ford came in any color as long as it was black. His shirts came in any color as long as they were starched white. And he would always emphasize what he was saying in those days because they were allowed to smoke in the federal buildings. He would jab that cigarette in the air, and kind of like marking off phoneme in the word, each syllable. And he would always look at the agents and say, perseverance, keep at it. The other thing he said that would be great advice for our politicians is that as federal agents, it's not enough that you don't engage in wrongdoing. You must never even give the illusion of doing wrong. Totally old school, but it's about perseverance. It's about keeping at it. We've been under attack. America has been under siege now for decades by globalists in both parties, if you're wondering where I'm going with this. And they amped it up. In the beginning, we were told, well, we're not going to call illegal aliens. We're going to call them immigrants. And everyone said, oh, we're being politically correct. Baloney. It's Orwellian. Altering thoughts by altering the language of the discussion because we think with words. Orwell made it clear that if you eliminate words, you eliminate the words the thoughts represent. Newspeak was more about eliminating words than creating new words. Okay? And so when they eliminated the word illegal alien, everyone became an immigrant. And if you dare suggest we keep any immigrant out of America, you're a xenophobe, you're a hater, you're a racist, you're a bigot. And then we were told, well, these immigrants do the work Americans won't do. Now, I have to tell you, every red-blooded American, I don't care what your skin color is, we all bleed red. Every red-blooded American should have gone berserk. What work won't an American do, James? My dad was a construction worker. I lost him tragically to lung cancer. Because, number one, he smoked those damn Chesterfield blow torches, as I call them, but also because he worked in the Navy shipyards during the Second World War. And so, you know, it was a tough lesson. But I literally carried my dad off his job his last day at work. He could barely stand up. His weight had dropped to where I don't think he weighed much more than 100 pounds. And he went in, and halfway through that day, he said, Mike, you got to come get me. I literally had to carry him off the job. He was crying. The men he worked with were crying. I was crying. And I'll never forget, it was a miserable, rainy day. The weather matched the mood of the day. he was dead about a month later. Now, why do I tell you that? Because here was a man who worked with his last ounce of strength as a construction worker. He was a tradesman. Now, think of how we look down at people that get dirt under their fingernails, right? Better to be a candy-ass banker? Really? You know, I love bankers. They tell you they offer all sorts of products. Did you ever know that three-card Monte and con games were products? Think about it. Think about it. A product in Mike Cutler land requires an assembly line, wood, metal, plastic, screws, wiring, something. Something that's tangible that you can hold in your hand. You can't hold a con game in your hand. But bankers walk around in nice suits and people say, oh, he's a banker. And we value people by how much money they make. People like Bezos, who has more money than some countries, who took away the health benefits for his part-time workers. Just to stop and let the enormity of that level of evil sink in. You know, live and let live. So we value people because they have money. Mike Bloomberg, Mini Mike, worth over $60 billion. He can't spend the money that's pouring into his bank accounts fast enough, okay? He's drowning in wealth. Could not take on China for fear that he'd lose business with them. He's 80. He's got $60 billion. Do you think it would keep him from buying hamburger tomorrow if China said we're not doing business with you anymore? These aren't men, okay? These are self-hating Americans. They care about themselves. They don't give a damn about America, Americans, or their fellow neighbors. And I'm so sick and tired of the divisiveness that we're witnessing. How dare folks talk about white privilege? There are some people who are born into wonderful circumstances and some people who aren't. It has nothing to do with skin color. My mother came to America at the age of 13, lived by herself in a rooming house, supported herself at the age of 13 in a country where she couldn't speak the language by working in a sweatshop making umbrellas for $3 a week and still sent pennies home to her mother back in Poland because her mother couldn't get out of Poland. Her mother died in the Holocaust because we're Jews. I was named for my mother's mother. My mother was just oozing white privilege. My dad, who worked to his last breath, oozing white privilege. We're all human beings, and where we land when we're born is the luck of the draw. And the kind of hatred that's separating America today is what happened during the Holocaust. My first wife died tragically of cancer when she was in her early 30s. I remember having dinner with her parents. Her father managed to stay out of the concentration camps, although the Nazis tried to kill him. They actually had him on one of those boxcars that they were moving to a camp. He escaped. He was a short little guy. He told me he could hear the bullets cracking through the trees all around him, but he got away. His brother was gunned down by the Nazis. My mother-in-law was in a concentration camp. And I said, how in the world did this happen? Her answer was very succinct. Because everybody kept saying, it can't get worse. My dad taught me, you can run, but you can't hide. You can run from the schoolyard bully, but sooner or later, they're going to catch up with you. They're going to corner you. And on that day, you better be up for the challenge. And I was up for the challenge because of the way I was raised. And when I listened to the hatred being spewed against one group of Americans versus another group of Americans, this is being done to us by America's enemies. And incredibly, Time magazine just published a piece last week. And what was the focus, James? How Iran and China and Russia are sowing the seeds of dissent in America. And even wrote, you're going to be amazed, I'm going to send you the article, it's going to be the topic of one of my pieces, even put out fake Twitter messages and other messages supposedly attributed to the poor boys. Think about that. So it would make them look more menacing to the people that oppose them. We have fallen victim to propaganda and to corrupt politicians and businesses that stand for nothing but profits. They don't care about people that get hurt. They don't care about people's jobs being taken away. All they care about, for them, the bottom line is the bottom line. They are about money and nothing else. And I have to tell you, I never measured a person's wealth by the size of their bank account or the size of their house. It's the size of their heart. It's their courage to do what needs to be done and to stand for something. That's how you measure somebody. You look at the astronauts. Think of what they did. I had the privilege of meeting a bunch of them. They weren't millionaires. They didn't make a ton of money. But look at their lifetimes of achievement. Look at Chuck Yeager. My goodness gracious, broke the sound barrier. Think of the spine that that takes to get into that little cockpit of that little plane that everyone thought was going to disintegrate as he approached the sound barrier, but he punched through.
With broken ribs.
With broken ribs, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
For those of you who haven't seen the movie, I strongly recommend The Right Stuff. It angered me. They gave Gus Grissom short shrift. By the way, I have an autographed letter from Gus Grissom from when I was back in junior high, believe it or not. These guys were my heroes. And when he died, it was a Friday. And I remember I was headed to go out on a date. And I had the radio on and the bulletin came over that Gus Grissom, Roger Chaffee, and Ed White, the first man to walk in space,
right,
were killed in a fire on the launch pad. I'm going to be honest. I pulled over and I cried like a baby. I wept. And I met Jim McDivitt, whether your audience knows it or not, was the guy who accompanied Ed White on that Gemini 4 mission, and he was the one who shot the video of Ed White doing that very first spacewalk by an American astronaut. These people weren't millionaires, but their achievements will reverberate throughout history unless we stupidly allow the history books to be rewritten by our enemies. What do you think of that?
Then it'll be Yuri Gagarin and Valentina Tereshnikova. Yeah, those will be the heroes.
We have got to stand up and say enough. And by the way, did you hear what they're doing in Morris County, New Jersey? And I gave a speech there. Great town, conservative town. By the way, I don't consider myself a conservative. I'm kind of a centrist. I'm a registered Democrat, full disclosure. People say, why are you a Democrat? I say, well, the Democrats used to be the firewall against globalism. It was the Republicans that wanted the damn cheap labor. Think about it. But nevertheless, if you look at the whole set of circumstances that we're living under right now, both parties have done this to us. And we've allowed this to happen. We sat back and allowed it to happen. But I think it's a bridge too far because in Morris County, New Jersey, the school board told the parents, didn't ask them. They said, we're not having a debate. This is the way it is. We're not going to call Columbus's birthday Columbus Day. And by the way, we're going to take away the names for all of the holidays. Just stop and let that one sink in. No more Christmas, no more Hanukkah, no more Easter, no more Passover, no more Veterans Day, no more Thanksgiving. The calendar for the district will simply say day off. Really? And the parents went berserker. Sometimes it gets so bad you can't ignore it. And I think that's why Time Magazine, part of the mainstream media, turned around and actually said that our enemies tried to keep Trump from winning the 2016 election. Time Magazine, Newsweek Magazine, that I wrote about that in my latest piece for Front Page Magazine, addressed the crisis on the border. They limited it to the border. Their focus was more on the plight of the aliens than anything else, but they did talk about how the towns in the border region are being impacted and overwhelmed. What's happening? Look at the interview Kamala Harris gave, the laughing hyena.
She was confronted
by the NBC reporter, and he said, did you go to the border? We went to the border. I mean, my thought was, really? You have a mouse in your pocket? And she finally said, well, I never went to Europe either. And Lester Holt looked at her with complete disdain. I said, holy smoke, this guy's growing a pair. Maybe he's going to be a journalist. Because that's what journalists are supposed to do, ask the tough questions to make those in positions of authority accountable. And you make people accountable by asking questions. And we've been taught now that questions are heresy. They will tell you the way it is, and you're supposed to go, okay, you're right, no questions, everything's great. Does it work?
Exactly. You don't question the orthodoxy. And And one of the things that you talked about, excuse me, one of the things you talked about Wednesday night in your webinar made me think, and we've talked about this before, that in many ways, the United States government is a silent partner with the cartels in terms of human trafficking that's coming across this border.
Absolutely. And sanctuary cities. I want everyone to understand this. And the topic for my webinar and an article that I just wrote for an organization called U.S. Incorporated, they had previously produced The Social Contract, a quarterly journal, and I was a regular contributor for The Social Contract. I believe altogether they published something like 20 of my articles over the past several years. They've stopped that magazine, but they do have a website up, and they've asked me to do a couple of postings a month, which I will. And what I talked about is how Biden has turned America into a sanctuary country. And by the way, the term sanctuary is BS. When I think of sanctuaries, I think of babbling brooks and blue skies and birds tweeting and all's right with the world, a place of security. Sanctuary could also be a room within a house of worship. Again, a place of security and comfort. A place of security and comfort where you allow people who enter the country by sneaking in to operate with the protection of the local government so that immigration authorities aren't alerted to their presence. And what's remarkable to me, and this is where I get insane about so many politicians, both parties, they hate Nancy Pelosi. By the way, isn't it interesting how Nancy Pelosi is sanctioning an anti-American congresswoman who equates America and our close ally Israel with Hamas and with the terrorists, the Taliban. And Nancy Pelosi was interviewed, and with a wave of her rickety hands, she said, well, I asked her to clarify it. She clarified it. I thanked her. She's a valuable member of the Democratic caucus. What clarification did it need when the woman comes out and says that we've got to look at the human rights abuses by Israel and the United States the same way we do Hamas and the Taliban? What clarification do you need?
That's pretty
she
clear
made it
to
abundantly
me.
Clear. I mean, isn't that crystal clear?
I didn't have any problem understanding that at all.
No. And just the interesting thing about Pelosi, and I said that in one of my webinars, I think it was for Dr. Dave Janda, Operation Freedom, I said, you know, what Pelosi needs to know is that when you're running from the mob, you may be in front of them and they may be behind you and you're going in the same direction, but running from the mob is not the same thing as leading the mob, because sooner or later, you know, don't look now, someone's gaining on you. They're going to have her for lunch because she is a coward. Nancy, I doubt you're listening to this, but you lack character, you lack spine, you lack principles, you're a train wreck. For that woman to stand in front of that ice chest, the ice cream princess, let them eat ice cream, on a night when Americans didn't know if they'd be able to feed their children, standing in front of a refrigerator that costs more than the cars of many of her constituents, just stop and let the enormity of this sink in.
And cities across the country on fire. Yeah.
Yes. And wave her ice cream around that costs, like, I don't know, $15 a pint.
Yeah, something ridiculous.
Who are you representing? That's like your neighbor comes to you and says, James, I just lost my job. I have medical bills. A close relative needs to go to the hospital. I want to help them. We can't. I don't know how I'm going to make the mortgage. And you say to your neighbor, wow, tough break. Hey, I got a new Corvette in the driveway. Want to go for a drive? That was that kind of a moment with Pelosi. If you are so fortunate to have what you have, Nancy, a hint. Don't show it off, especially when everyone around you is suffering terribly. She was gloating. Look at me. I'm better than you. I have what you wish you had. You know what, Nancy?
And people in her district crap in the streets.
Yes. And so my answer to that is I wouldn't want anything Nancy had if in exchange I had to look into the mirror and see that ugly mug staring back at me. What do you think of that? There is nothing socially redeeming about the speaker of the House. I have a problem with words sometimes. I find this reprehensible. But why aren't the Republicans making the connection between 9/11 and the attacks of 9/11 and the fact that everything Biden is doing violates the findings or recommendations of the 9/11 Commission?
Well, I think they know. I think they know. These people aren't stupid, and I don't know why they're inact. I can't explain the inaction.
You want me to tell you what my hunch is?
Please.
I think they are hoping that they will be able to jam that piece of trash, comprehensive immigration reform, down our throat. So they want to complain about Biden, but they don't want to remind you that when you open up the borders, terrorists are streaming into our country. They don't want you to think about that because their ultimate goal. See, I really think that there are many, not all Republicans, but enough Republicans are doing cartwheels because of Biden. It's a win-win. Think about it. He's doing what the bribers, you know, I have a problem with language. The campaign contributors, slap me next time I do that. I have a problem with words. You know, it's
the customers.
The customers. Their bosses, actually. I mean,
yeah.
Think of the employer-employee relationship. The employer writes the check. The employee deposits the check. Who's writing the check? The lobbyists, right? Yeah. The oligarchs. Who's depositing the checks? The political parties. So the political parties are doing the bidding of the people. They place their order. They tell them what to do, and they do it, or else. Because in politics, you want to take someone out of the picture. And the mob decaps people. In politics, they take away your money, which is why they hated Donald Trump, because he didn't need their money, which meant they had no control over him. They want to dangle the money the way the greyhounds race on the track. They have a mechanical rabbit running around the track, and the dogs go chasing the rabbit. Here, the politicians are chasing the check. Not the rabbit, but the check. Okay? And you have some of these politicians saying, I don't take PAC money. I would never take money from a political action committee. No, they're right. They don't. Not directly. The political action committee gives the money to both parties, and then the parties distribute the money to the good little boys and girls that do as they're told. So really, what is the political party? It's a money laundering operation.
Yeah, it's a laundering device.
Yes. Let's stop being stupid, and let's start to understand that if this country is about America and Americans, why would you bring in workers to displace American workers? Why would you not secure the Mexican border when there's been hearings about how Hezbollah, Hamas, and other terrorist groups are working throughout Latin America at the behest of Iran to move drugs and terrorists into the United States? Iran is racing to a nuclear weapon. What happens if we try to interfere? I'll tell you my fear. They're going to activate their sleeper agents. And when I hear this nonsense, even on Fox News, oh, they caught four people on the terror watch list trying to enter America. Okay. Do you think every terrorist is registered like they belong to a country club? Most terrorists don't show up on any watch list. Okay. Most of the 19 hijackers that carried out 9/11 were unknown to most law enforcement and intelligence agencies. They knew some of them, not all of them. And a sleeper agent, to clarify, is a foreign national who one way or another manages to enter the United States, and they wait for the tap on the shoulder that says tomorrow's the day. And while they're here, they're doing whatever they have to do to gather up their supplies, to make the contacts as they prepare for a deadly attack. And in fact, the 9/11 Commission was so crystal clear about this. I mean, it was astonishing. And if you look at what Biden is doing, and nobody wants to talk about it, why aren't the Republicans, if they're so upset with Joe Biden, why aren't they holding a collective news conference and say, you know what, Joe Biden is violating the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission? I mean, think about how crystal clear that message would be if they made that point and backed it up. And in fact, it was really interesting because if you look at I'm having a senior moment, the California female senator, Dianne Feinstein.
Dianne Feinstein?
Was, yep. And this was on February 24th, 1998, there was a hearing about foreign terrorists operating in the United States. Now, this is 4 years before 9/11. Think about that. This was 2 days short of the fifth anniversary of the first bombing at the World Trade Center in Lower Manhattan that killed six, injured over 1,000, and created $500 million in damages. And if the towers came down sideways, there could have been hundreds of thousands of dead bodies. The sea wall would have been breached. The Hudson River would have flooded Lower Manhattan. It might still be uninhabitable 20 years later. Think about what almost happened. As it was, six people are dead and others injured. And she said, we should reconsider this notion of a visa waiver program. By the way, that was a gift from Ronald Reagan. So when people say, why aren't you a Republican? I can give you a bunch of reasons why I despise both parties. I look for individual leaders. There's only a handful, and I don't care if they're with the Hopping Kangaroo Party. But he gave us the visa waiver program. He gave us the diversity visa that was signed into law by George Herbert Walker Bush, and he gave us the amnesty. And we're all told, well, it was supposed to involve 1 million. It wound up involving 4 million. That's another big, fat, juicy lie, because nobody talks about how many children the 4 million brought into the country. Just like when Joe says 11 million, Yale says 22 point something million as of 2 years ago, and there's probably been 1 million more added since, and God knows how many have been here besides that. And they don't talk about what happens if each alien, on average, brings in four children. We're looking at an influx of 100 million. It's lie after lie, propaganda after propaganda. It's both political parties that have done this to us. So why aren't the Republicans jumping up and doing what Dianne Feinstein had the courage to do? And no one screamed, fainted, or rioted, by the way. She said, we ought to consider ending the visa waiver pilot program. It was a pilot back then. She said, we probably should not be giving visas to aliens who come from countries that sponsor terrorism. Of course, today, because of what has happened in 20 years since 9/11, these people have spread out. They're all over Europe and elsewhere where they're eligible for the visa waiver program. But this was in 98. And then she said, we certainly ought to rethink this notion of giving training in chemistry, physics, and biology to people who come from countries that sponsor terrorism, because we're teaching our enemies how to create weapons of mass destruction. And even went on to list terrorists who were trained either in the United States or England and became terrorists and used the training as engineers and scientists to build weapons. In fact, one guy who came from, I believe it was Pakistan, I don't have her statement in front of me, but it was interesting because he worked for Allied Chemical, and because he worked at Allied Chemical, he got his hands on the explosives that were used in the 93 bombing at the World Trade Center. So why aren't the politicians, the so-called conservative politicians, turning around and saying what Joe Biden is doing violates the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission? I mean, Nancy Pelosi opened up that trap door when she said, we need a 9/11-style commission over what happened January 6th at the Capitol. By the way, for the record, I don't know, and I don't think anyone knows, the identity of the individual who shot that unarmed woman who was the Air Force veteran when she climbed through a window. Should she have climbed through that window? Absolutely not. The way that those people conducted themselves was reprehensible. But to refer to it as an insurrection, but when the rioters attempted to storm the gates at the White House were described as mostly peaceful, when dozens of federal officers wound up in the hospital because of a mostly peaceful demonstration, and a fire was set at the church across the street from the White House, this is like something out of Russia or China. This isn't the United States. Instead of confronting the reality of what happened, oh, these were peaceful protesters, peaceful demonstrators. Really? And meanwhile, you have dozens of injured federal officers. They had to bring in reinforcements to put up higher gates and protect the White House. That wasn't an attempt at insurrection. Of course not. And my name isn't Mike Cutler. But what happened at the Capitol, it was wrong. And I'm going to tell you, I was very upset when the crowd supporting Donald Trump started to chant, fight for Trump. I'm going to tell you, I will never fight for a politician. I will fight for my family. I will fight for my closest friends. Politician? No. I will fight for the Constitution. I will fight for honest elections. I will fight to defend the Constitution and the survival of our nation. That's why we have armies. That's why we have law enforcement. But fight for a politician? I'm sorry. I thought Donald Trump was probably the best president we've had in decades. But I still disagreed with him on many issues. And the notion of fighting for a politician, that to me is what happens in third world countries, not America. But that's just
you're right, because what that is basically that comes down to a cult of personality. And I'm just saying that's where you get Hitler, that's where you get Stalin. And I'm not saying what Trump was, but that's how it leads to it.
It's a dangerous precedent. And when I heard that chant, it really upset me, to be honest with you. But if Pelosi is going to run around saying we need a 9/11 style commission, then here's my answer. Nancy, did you read the 9/11 commission? That was the question, and I've said it before on your program, that I wish Trump had asked Joe Biden. Hey, Joe, don't ask him, could he say law enforcement? That was an absurdity. It's one of the things they did not like about Donald Trump was his lack of ability to communicate effectively. What he should have said, did you read the 9/11 commission report? You want to give tens of millions of illegal aliens lawful status. There's no capacity to interview these people. Forget that. If there's no interviews, there's no field investigations. And it took just 19 hijackers, to put it in perspective, 19, to kill more people than we lost to the entire Japanese fleet at Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941. And the death count from 9/11 continues to this day as people are dying of diseases that they got because of their exposure to the toxins when the buildings collapsed. So that was the question. And then he could have gone from there into the law enforcement issue. Why in the world would you not want to keep people who are criminals out of the country? Why would you want to bring in more workers than the number of new jobs that you're going to create? Build Back Better? Bunk. That was the title of one of my articles. How do you build back better when you're bringing in more workers than the number of new jobs you claim you're going to be able to create? What does that do? And so it's interesting because I just saw an article where they're talking about climate change, and nobody is allowed to question climate change, by the way, and I certainly question it. But if you buy into the notion, number one, of climate change, and number two, that it's human activity that's causing it, because there's so many factors. And I don't know if I ever mentioned it. Maybe I'll mention it briefly. I had an argument with a climatologist, and I said to him, and he said, you don't believe in global warming? I said, look, I'm not sure what I believe in, but I do know that Earth's climate has changed periodically. There was a time when the Earth went through ice ages, not one, but several. And in fact, a planetologist referred to those epochs in the history of the world as Snowball Earth. And this was long before humans appeared on the face of the planet. Snowball Earth. And somehow we thawed out. And the amazing thing is, I don't think any archaeologists have ever found the remains of a dinosaur in the cab of an 18-wheeler or sitting around a barbecue. So I'm trying to figure out how exactly the Earth thawed out from Snowball Earth to where it became subtropical and then froze again. There's periodic cycles, you know? But the question that I asked the scientist was, I understand scientific method says when you do an experiment, you have to remove all the variables except for the one variable you're testing. Is that true? And he said it is. And I asked him, how many variables go into climate? And he said, well, we don't know all of them. I said, all right, now, maybe I'm getting this sideways. But if the scientific method is accurate, that you have to remove all the variables except for the one you're testing, how do you remove the variables that you're not even aware of? Stuttered and stammered, and he said, well, if you do studies, you could see where the temperature of the Earth went up, and it was proportionate to the rise in carbon dioxide. And I said, well, that's interesting, but what if the Earth is getting warmer for other reasons? The sun is a variable star. The Earth's climate is hugely impacted by what the sun does, okay? Plus, there's cosmic radiation coming from the rest of the universe. There's a whole bunch of factors. You have vents under the ocean floors. We can go on forever. This is a 100-ring circus. But what if the Earth is getting warmer, not because of human activity, just because of all these other factors, but as the Earth warms, biological biomass decays more rapidly because generally when the temperature goes up, chemical reactions increase in velocity. So what if the Earth gets warmer, biomass, you know, trees that fall in the forest and animals that die and all these things that happen in the garbage we put out that has biological material, it decays, it rots. Supposing it rots more rapidly because of an increase in temperature, could that not result in the outgassing of more carbon dioxide? So you actually have the horse in front of the cart, or the cart in front of the horse now. Cause and effect, which is which? And he got all kinds of rattled, and he said, well, I could explain that. I said, okay, I'm listening. I don't have time today, but one day we need to sit down and talk about it. And I thought, wow, what a cop-out. So a couple of months later, I happened to speak to another climatologist who worked for NOAA, the government weather agency. The man had been there for decades and has a PhD in physics and meteorology. And he said to me that I was right, that they've done studies, and then I read the studies where biomass tends to decay more rapidly when the temperature goes up. And by the way, when the oceans get warmer, they outgas carbon dioxide that's dissolved in the oceans, and even methane, which is an even more potent greenhouse gas. So in other words, the Earth gets warmer, up comes carbon dioxide, just like leaving a bottle of soda pop on the back porch during the summer. You open it up and it overflows. I said, that's remarkable. He said, no. He said, the questions you asked were right. You know, I was originally a pre-engineering student. Two of my kids are engineers. So a couple of months later, I happened to bump into this guy. We're on the phone again, having a conversation. I said, you know, before we go any further, I have to ask you a question. Who do you work for? He said, well, I used to work for the nuclear industry. Bingo. The nuclear industry hates the petroleum industry because instead of using coal or fuel oil, they want you to use radioactive material to generate electricity. So, of course, they're going to tell you that, you know, burning fossil fuels are bad. Yes. Always follow the money. Now, I'm not telling you that I'm certain that we're not hurting the environment, and we're putting so much poison into the environment, we got to stop it. I mean, what we're doing is dangerous. And we've seen report after report, Love Canal and all sorts of others. Dark Waters, I guess, is the latest movie that's out about how people were poisoned by chemical companies through Teflon, by the way, DuPont and Teflon. Terrible
right.
story. So corporate greed has no conscience. Should we clean up? Absolutely. And everyone's pushing for fusion, which is basically clean nuclear energy because it doesn't use fission, but fusion, which is the way that stars are powered. We can ultimately get to free, clean energy based on fusion. I hope the day comes. I'm not a big fan of dumping garbage into the environment or into our waters or anywhere. But goodness, we've got Americans convinced of all kinds of crazy stuff. And if you dare challenge anyone and say, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense, you will come under attack. This is the tactic of intimidation and subversion. Don't you dare ask any questions. And then what I'm also seeing, and I looked it up, and you could check this one out. Part of what's happening with the so-called sexual revolution, and don't call anybody boys or girls, I'm waiting for them to say we can't have Father's Day or Mother's Day anymore.
They're right? working on it.
They are. Because if you saw the congressional hearing, they don't want to use the term mother anymore, but birth person.
Birth person, yeah. Crazy.
Birth
Insanity.
Person. Well,
and
they,
you know
I,
what,
I
Mike,
maybe
the thing that frightens me? Is that, and the thing that frightens me about this, and you know it to be true, there are people who heard that idiot spew that out, and they sat there, and yeah, and they rubbed their chin with their thumb and forefinger, and went, you know, by God, that's right. That's right.
Yep.
We should do that.
Yep. It's amazing. Well, didn't you get people to buy the pet rock? Didn't people
Say
buy
that again?
The pet rock?
Oh,
didn't
yeah.
people go out and buy the pet rock? You know, I was addressing a room filled with Air Force generals one day in Washington. I work with the Speakers Bureau. And this woman, a very bright gal, and she was in civvies. They were all in civvies. I didn't know it, but it turned out that she was the Chief Judge Advocate General for the U.S. Air Force. And she said to me, Mr. Cutler, how do you account for the stupidity of the average American? I said, I can answer that in two words. And she said, two words. I said, yeah, pet rock. And all these generals and colonels in the room broke up laughing. And I said, but wait, if you think that's dumb enough, realize that a year later they made even more money selling the training manual for the pet rock. I said, could you picture it? Charlie comes to work bleary-eyed. He can't keep his eyes open. And his friend Bob comes up. He says, Charlie, you look terrible. What's wrong? He says, well, I was up all night trying to teach my pet rock how to play dead. But how far from that are we? And when you have a discussion, people say, well, I've heard and they say. And the other thing that's very dangerous, I used to write for a website out in California. And they heard that I was on a program that was hosted by a member of the John Birch Society. To my knowledge, the John Birch Society, people may not agree with them, but there's nothing illegal about the John Birch Society, right? It's not the Communist Party. They don't advocate shooting people for sport. They have a political ideology that you either agree with or you don't. That's the beauty of democracy. You get to pick what you like, what makes sense to you. That's how it works. And I agreed with him on some issues, but mostly I disagreed. But when you're high profile, and that was back when I was doing hearing after hearing after hearing after hearing. So they had this hearing, and suddenly I'm on the program, and I get a frantic phone call from the people that I was writing for. They said, well, you on program XYZ on blah, blah, blah. And I said, yeah, I just did that. What? Go online. I said, what happened? Go online. Put your name in and see what comes up. Well, within 15 minutes of coming off the air, at least 10 websites, Mike Cutler, immigration expert, in quotation marks, like I'm fake, was on the John Birch Society radio program. And she said to me, what are you thinking? You write for us, we publish your articles, and you go on that program? I said, okay, and did you know he was John Birch? I said, nope. Would you have gone on it if you knew? I said, absolutely. And she went crazy. I said, you better check in with a doctor and find out what's broken in that mechanism between your ears. What is wrong with going on programs and providing a perspective based on my experiences? I wish I could get on every program across the broad spectrum of people. Why? Because we need to speak with each other. We have become an armed camp where I'll say to somebody, do you watch Fox News? Absolutely not. You watch CNN? What I have the stomach for, yeah. People then say, why would you watch CNN? Well, I want to know what the people I disagree with are saying. I used to be a regular at CNN when Lou Dobbs was there. I was on CNN sometimes two or three times a week. But my goodness, we need to speak to each other. Simply speaking within your own echo chamber doesn't do anybody any good. All you're doing is reinforcing your ideas, not considering that somebody may have a different take or a different perspective that might be helpful, that might actually be accurate. I'm not always right. I look back at the positions I've taken on certain issues over the years, and there are issues right now have changed my opinion. It was easy for me to be strong on gun control while I had a badge so I could get on an airplane and go on vacation with a .357 on my hip. I took my son when he was 4 years old to Disney World, and I flew with my gun on my hip. I walked through Disney World with my firearm. Why? I was a federal agent. I could carry it anywhere in the United States. And then when you retire and you go down to Arizona and you realize that help isn't coming, you can't even call for help because in those days there were few cell phone towers, it becomes a very different story. So life experiences and observations may change how you view certain issues. Now, I do agree with background checks. And people, by the way, you may disagree with me. That's cool. You can disagree. That's called America. That's called the First Amendment. Okay? That's what discussion and discourse is about, that we can sit down like civilized adults with mutual respect, and have a discussion. And I'll provide my thoughts, and you can provide your thoughts. You know what they used to call those things? We used to call them conversations. I know you may not have heard of it recently, but these were called conversations, discourse. I was going to teach debate on the college level. They don't do that anymore because they want to only have one brand of thought permeate the system. The way that you make certain that you don't get challenged for having bad ideas is to make sure there's no discussion. It's like the Model T Ford. You can get in any color as long as it was black.
Black, right.
And so they were really worked up. And I said, let me tell you how strongly I feel about it. And the woman said to me, okay. I said, if the fact that I went on this program means you don't want me to write for you, it's been nice knowing you. Hasta la vista, baby. I'm out of here. I said, no one is going to censor Mike Cutler. I had the same kind of a deal when I was going to go to Orange County to address a bunch of Republicans, and the woman saw something that I had written about Ronald Reagan where I disagreed with Reagan, and she called me up. She said, Mr. Cutler, you can't do that. I said, I can't do what? You disagreed with Ronald Reagan. I said, was he God? Well, no. What do you mean I can't disagree with him? Well, this is Ronnie country. You can't come out here and tell people he was wrong. I said, so you've elevated him to the position of a deity. God is infallible. Ronald Reagan is infallible. Ronald Reagan must have been God. She said, that's ridiculous. I said, it is, but that's what you sound like. She said, well, I don't know what to do. I said, well, this is a problem for you. I have an easy solution. She said, what's that? I said, don't send me the ticket. Let's cancel the event. No one is going to censor me. And I went out there. I talked about my disagreements with Ronald Reagan's immigration policies, the fact of the amnesty, and all the other stuff. You know what? I got a standing ovation. Now, I don't care if I got a standing ovation. I wouldn't have minded if I got booed. Whatever happened to being strong-willed Americans who know how to stand on 2 feet and articulate their thoughts clearly without intimidation? Am I getting anything wrong here, James?
No, that level of civil discourse has been eroded with the, I think, it, and it's not a coincidence, that level of civil discourse has eroded as we've seen the ascendancy of social media and the anonymity that it brings.
And I'll tell you the other thing that they have done is this is right out of the fascists' playbook. And these college kids are clueless. And you and I talked about this last week off air. You want to know who the real anti-fascists are? It was the U.S. military. I wish we could have every kid in America see those videos, those actual documentaries of those young men on those ships hitting the beach at Normandy and getting shot down. Or the airplanes piloted by those high school kids hitting the drink, having been shot down by the Japanese. All those vignettes. Who were they fighting? The fascists. So who was the real anti-fascists? The men and women of the United States Armed Forces. And these screwy kids are off there looking for some cause, you know, rebel with a cause, and they have no idea what they're fighting for. It reminds me of Laughing. I forgot which of the entertainers did it, but or Johnny Carson would do it also. He'd go out there all fired up, and they would tell him that he was using the wrong word, and then he would look up and go, never mind. You know, they have no idea what they're, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
And so they're all fired up. They have all this emotion, but they don't even know what they're fighting for, or what they're fighting against. They're clueless, but it sounds good. Let's go out and protest. Let's go out and burn down a building. And
mostly,
you know,
peacefully.
Mostly peacefully. Yes. Could you ever forget those journalists standing behind burning buildings and saying mostly peaceful
mostly
demonstrators?
Well,
what
that
is
was
it, a weenie roast? Bring
that,
your marshmallows.
Yeah, they're making s'mores.
Holy smoke. And so now I'm losing my mind. Maybe later you'll help me look for it. I have a magnifying glass and a flashlight. Yeah, I have to tell you, though, it's crazy. We really need to start to sit down with our neighbors and say, listen, let's think through what we're witnessing. Let's think through what's actually happening here. China is out to take over the world. Make no mistake about it.
Absolutely.
They want to dominate the world. And they're looking long-term. And to politicians, long-term is the next election. They don't see long-term 10 years down the road. China's thinking generations down the road. And these nitwit politicians, oh, my God, my election is coming up in 8 months. That's as long into the future as I'm willing to look. And they're willing to give up America to win the next election. Think Nancy Pelosi.
Oh,
I'm not a particularly
Chuck Schumer,
religious Chuck Schumer. Now, I'm not a particularly religious guy, but we all know the story about the wisdom of Solomon, the two women who both claimed to be the baby's mother. They didn't have DNA testing back then. So Solomon said, we'll cut the baby in half and you could each have a half, because he knew damn well that the real mother would never allow it. And sure enough, one woman said, great, give me my half. And the other woman said, better she gets the baby. I don't want any harm to come to him. It was abundantly clear who the real mother was. They've told Pelosi, we're going to cut America up into tiny little pieces, but we'll give you a nice sized chunk. And she's holding out her hands waiting for her chunk. That's who Pelosi is, the Wicked Witch of the West. You know, I don't know if I told you, but I'm trying to get confirmation, but I heard a rumor, but it's only a rumor so far, that the FAA is thinking of suspending her pilot's license for her broomstick, but I'm not sure if it's true or not. So I'll let you know when I get to
Oh, my God. Could you see her fired up on gin and tonics, slinging that thing around all the
oh my God.
Monuments in D.C.?
But this is what passes for leadership. And speaking of gin and tonic, think about it. We have a barmaid calling the shots. How's that for an interesting pun?
Oh, Jack Doc. Yeah. Good one. That was a good one. Yeah.
I mean, these little snots are in Congress for a term or two. Nancy Pelosi's old enough to be their great-grandmother. They're telling her what to do because she's fearful that if she disagrees, they're going to boot her out of that chair. And then how's she going to tear up? Oh, she won't do it. Biden's there. I forgot. Tear up the State of the Union address. I mean, where have you ever seen that level of contempt for a sitting president of the United States of America? You can disagree all you want. I did not like Barack Obama. By the way, I didn't like George W. Bush either. I was given an opportunity to go to an event where he was speaking. I turned it down.
But he didn't like you that much either, did he?
No, I was told that when my name came up in the Oval Office, he had a meltdown. I wish I had a video. I'd run that damn thing on a loop, and I'd just giggle all day. It'd be an all-day laugh.
I remember the first time you told me that story. I like to die.
Look, I don't pull punches. And you know, people that have known me for many years say, you know, the interesting thing about you, Mike, is you're still Mike Cutler. I said, who the hell am I supposed to be? I'm still Mike Cutler, of course. And again, I may have modified my position on certain issues, but I'm a constant. You know, I don't put up a wet finger in the air and go, which way is the wind blowing at this event so I know what to talk about? Now, to be truthful, if I'm speaking in front of a chamber of commerce or a rotary and we're talking about immigration and the hiring of illegal aliens, I'm not going to talk about wages so much as I'm going to talk about you don't want people working for your company that may have criminal records who may do harm to your employees because you face liability issues. Besides the fact that you could be, well, I don't think it would happen under Biden, but under Trump, you might have gotten fined or even prosecuted for knowingly hiring illegal aliens. So, you know, you try to get them to your viewpoint in a way that reflects where their head is at. Okay. And if I'm talking to a bunch of workers, I'm going to talk about how this protects job security and wages. These are same elements of the same issue on the same side of the issue. But I'm not going to get in front of one group and say open borders and go to the other group and say lock those borders down. And that's what politicians tend to do. What group am I speaking in front of? One of my buddies was an ATF agent. He was protecting Ronald Reagan. He called me up. He was frantic. He was really worked up. And Reagan was running for his first term. And I don't know if the folks know this, but Secret Service does not have enough agents during the election season to cover the candidates and the president and the vice president and visiting dignitaries. So they'll bring in agents from the same, whether it's Treasury or DHS or whatever, to back them up and assist with providing executive protection. And back then, Secret Service was under the Treasury. Now it's under DHS. So DHS agents, ICE agents, frequently back up Secret Service, which makes the administration very happy because it gives them more jobs for the ICE agents to do that have nothing to do with immigration. But nevertheless, this was during Reagan's first run for office, 1980, and he's at this event, bunch of conservatives, and he stood up there, and my buddy is an ATF agent, and his detail were mostly ATF agents, alcohol, tobacco, firearms. And when Ronald Reagan got up to speak, and he said, "I know all of you are worried about the Second Amendment. When I'm president, we're going to get rid of ATF. We don't need them. We know what the Constitution says." And, you know, he got a standing ovation. He gets into the elevator, and these agents are looking at him like, holy smoke. And Reagan wasn't the fool. He said, "Are you guys ATF by any chance?" And my buddy said, "Yes, Governor, we are ATF agents." He said, "I know what I said, and there had to be upsetting to you, but don't be too upset. That's just political talk." It's incredible. It's incredible. If you or I did business the way that politicians do business, we would be sued and we would be prosecuted for consumer fraud.
And you know,
holds them accountable.
That's the thing, Mike. There is so much boilerplate in politics on both sides. I mean, You gave an excellent example of it, and you know, we could look at probably anything. You could just close your eyes and pick out a quote from Chuck Schumer, Barack Obama, and it would be the same thing. And I don't know what we do about it. It's a reality, and I just maybe we do a better job of disseminating, or what kind of structural changes have to take place?
Well, sometimes I wish we could have recall elections for all these bums. You know, there should be a lemon law for politicians. You know, imagine you buy a new car. And the car sits in your driveway. You can't start it. They try to fix it. In New York, it's three strikes and you're out. Three times you have a problem in the first year, you're entitled to get all your money back. We ought to be able to do that with politicians. And I'm going to tell you, the interesting thing was Trump didn't do that. He kept saying promises made, promises kept, that he did. And that had it really chapped their rear ends. Because what is he doing? Keeping promises? What the hell does he think he's doing?
Think he is? Yeah.
Right?
And the thing about it, and here's the dichotomy to me. You hear these people, and there's some scandal somewhere, whatever level, community, you know, a town level, state level, federal level, whatever it is, there's some scandal. The politician is obviously a rat, and he's been in there for 1,000 years, and something happens, and we find out that he's been fleecing the public for decades. And then people start shaking their fist. Term limits. Okay, great. Term limits. But how about this, Mike? You voted him in. You can vote his ass back out.
I would think.
I understand.
Right now with Newsom. Yes.
I understand the logic behind term limits. But yeah.
Everybody's subject to firing. Except politicians. It's incredible. It's absolute. They make promises, and they know they can't keep it. They know they won't keep it. Everyone knows that. The plank of the party. Yeah, I wrote a thing about Chuck's plank for the Democrat Party, and I said it was made out of balsa wood, his planks. Planks.
Lincoln logs.
Lincoln logs. Goodness. I mean, are you serious? So they make all these – well, you know, there's a story about a guy running for governor, and he goes to an Indian reservation, Native Americans. And he gets up there, and he's walking through the mud. They land in a helicopter, and they take him out to the podium, and they're all around him. And he keeps talking about what he's going to do. When I'm elected governor, I'm going to build a first-rate hospital. And the folks in attendance start chanting, "Umgawa gawa, umgawa gawa." And when I'm elected president, that high school that you have is in a state of disrepair. I'm going to erect a brand new high school with the best science labs and the best library and computers like anyone that no one has ever seen before. Umgawa gawa, umgawa gawa. And they're getting louder and they're getting more forceful. And he looks to his aide and goes, "Wow, they're really eating this stuff up." And he keeps making all these great promises. They keep chanting, "Umgawa gawa." And he gets off the podium, he heads back to the helicopter, and as he's walking across the muddy field, the chief grabs him by the arm and says, "Be careful, you almost stepped in that umgawa gawa."
And and they do it, and we give them a nod and a wink. We look at it and say, well, that's how this business is conducted.
They're politicians. What do you expect?
Exactly. And I don't know how, how do we...
And by the way, when we go to a hotel and you sign in, they give you the key to the room, you sign a log. And one of the things, you may not know this, what you're signing is if you break it, you bought it. Okay? You get drunk and you smash up some stuff, they're going to send you the bill. Wouldn't it be nice if they gave that to the president when he signs in for 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue? You break it, you bought it. There is zero accountability. Zero accountability. And then you have these imperious members of Congress. I mean, not all of them. Some are very nice. Louis Gohmert is great. By the way, I think I may have told you, Lou Barletta is running for governor of Pennsylvania. I sincerely hope he wins. He's a good guy. And he got screwed by the Republican Party. They defunded his campaign so that he did not have the money for a single TV ad. This was the guy that helped Trump carry Pennsylvania during the presidential election of 2016, and they're probably still pissed at him. And he was not a globalist. You're not a globalist, you're done. You're finished. They are all globalists. They're all bought and paid for by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And the American people need to stand up. COVID is on the wane. We need to go to these town hall meetings. And by the way, any politician who refuses to participate in a town hall meeting needs to be voted out of office, period. And I don't care if he's a nice guy or a nice gal. I don't care if you like their policies. If you're not willing to meet with your constituents on a routine basis, you are not representing them, and I don't care what you say. When I was an agent, if my boss came up to me and said, Mike, at 0800 hours tomorrow morning, we're having an all-hands meeting in my office, I was there. Imagine if I said to my boss, I think I'm going to sleep in. Right? That wasn't on the menu. If you're going to have a town hall meeting, and the other thing is we need to be smart because bureaucracies run on statistics. And I want to talk a little bit about that and about how the game gets played. Because you were saying that I should talk about some of my experiences because some of them were very funny. But when I started to work for the government, and I was in a desperate situation, I needed the job. I hired on when I was 23 years old. My parents had died. I'm trying to hang on to my parents' house, which is where I still am today. It's the house I grew up in. I needed a job. I just got my degree. And so I didn't want to lose my job, but I saw things going on. So when they hired me, they swore me in as an agent, criminal investigator, they used to call the position. And they hand me a badge, and what does the badge say? Immigration inspector. That was the first of many times when I asked myself, what the hell am I doing here? So I said, I just took the oath as an immigration agent, and now I'm an inspector. Well, we need inspectors. Don't worry about it. At some point, we'll move you over to the investigations branch. And I thought, my God, what kind of an operation is this? And I went to Border Patrol Academy down in Texas, and I'm at the airport, and they used to give the inspectors something known as standby work. So what was that? If an alien, for argument's sake, said, well, I came in, they gave me 6 months, but I have a family emergency. I need another 3 months to stay in the United States. They'd make out an application. We would adjudicate the applications. And we were given a certain amount of leeway. Is it a reasonable request? What was the family emergency? Is there a doctor's letter attached? Whatever it was. But the way they wanted me to write a denial, if you weren't going to approve it, if you approved it, you just approved it, you stamped it, you put it into an envelope, you mailed it back, and they said, okay, you have another 90 days, fine. If not, we used to give them, I think it was 2 weeks or 4 weeks to stay, to leave the United States, and that was it. And we were supposed to write on the denial. It was a form, and we didn't have computers then, so we would have to do it by hand, type it up. Records of the service, meaning the Immigration Service, indicate you last entered the United States on such and such date, authorized to remain in the country until such and such date. Your request for an extension has been denied. It would appear that the purpose for your visit has been completed and you need to depart the United States no later than, I don't know, August 31st. And I said to my bosses, well, where's the record of the service? Well, didn't the guy tell you in the application when he entered the United States? I said, yes. Well, you have a record. I said, that's not a record. It's an application. Why can't I write according to your application? He said, Mike, the American people expect that we have records. I said, okay. I'm expecting that I have a Ferrari. Where's my Ferrari? There's no record. It's an application. I said, what happens if this guy committed a murder in England and claims he was here when he was really in England and then came to America 3 days after the murder and we don't have the record? We're giving this guy an airtight alibi. Records of the service indicate you last entered the United States 3 days after this guy was shot in the head, right? Or the guy claims he was in England and wasn't here when he committed the murder, and we're saying that he didn't get here until a week after this guy was killed. He said, you've been watching too many TV dramas. I said, look, I don't want to have an argument. I'm uncomfortable saying records of the service. He said, well, we're telling you what to do. You're probationary. Do you want to keep the job? And I've got mortgage bills and, you know, mortgages to pay and all kinds of stuff. So I'm disturbed by it. And I said, well, I got to figure out a way around this where I can do the job the right way. I find out that in Washington, in those days, it was microfilm. There were no computers. This is 1971, 1972. No computers. Forget computers. We were lucky if we had handheld calculators, right? So I called down to Washington, and we had these women who could run across to the building where they had the microfilm. And if we had the record of entry, they would microfilm it and send it to me. I used to work the late shift. I was a single guy. So I used to work 2 to 10 or 12 to 8 because I could go out on a date and then, you know, sleep till 10 in the morning and rush and get to work on time and everyone's happy. So after 5 o'clock, the office shut down. But the people in Washington would be on duty until midnight. So I'd get into the office at let's say 5:30. The staff is gone. I'd call down to Washington. This is Mike Cutler. I'm at the airport at Kennedy. I need the entry information for so-and-so. So the woman would get back to me about a day later, and she'd say, Mr. Cutler, we found what you're looking for. We'll send it to you. And I would get an envelope in the mail, and then I would attach that, and then I could say, records of the service indicate. So I'm doing everything exactly right. My boss calls me in. He said, where did you get that information about the arrival? I said, I called down to headquarters. He said, Mr. Cutler, do you know if everybody did that, that operation would come to a screeching halt? You don't need to do this for that. You're just supposed to do what you're told. I said, what I'm being told to do is unethical and it's improper. We have a big fight. Next day, I go to make my usual phone call, and somebody put a cylinder lock on the telephone. These were rotary dial phones. Remember the old cylinder lock? So
right.
Lock the dial from spinning?
Yeah.
So I'm not without plan B. I found I could tap out the number 9 by pressing the button on the top of the phone. 9 got me an outside line, and then if I could tap out 10, I wasn't good enough to tap out the entire number to Washington, but I could usually, with 3 or 4 shots, hit 9 followed by 10. 10 gets you the operator. Then I'd say to the operator, I'm trying to make a phone call, but I'm having a problem. Can you place the call for me? And they did. So this went on for about another month. And I come to work one day, and they remove the handsets from all the telephones.
You want to make a call, you got to go to the handset locker and sign one out because of Cutler.
Well, so now understand, it's always been a Fugazi operation. You know, Jim Lovell talked about Apollo 13. And I met Jim Lovell, by the way, which is another amazing thing. I met so many incredible people. And he was such a gentleman and so humble. And I mean, unbelievable. I spent a half hour with him. But here's the thing that Lovell had said. That when there's a disaster, it's not usually only one thing that goes bad. It's a succession of things that go badly. It's like we used to study about war. There's the short-term and the long-term cause of war, you know. So immigration was always considered nothing. But if you really stop and analyze what immigration does, we are the follow-on to the United States military. the shared mission of all branches of the U.S. Armed Forces is to keep the enemies of America as far from our shores as possible. But up close and in person, guess who gets the assignment? It's the Border Patrol and ICE. That's how serious it is. When I went to Europe on my honeymoon with my first wife, may she rest in peace, we went to Amsterdam. We flew out of Schiphol Airport, and I walked up to one of the immigration inspectors at the airport, and I asked him how he liked working there. And you know, they have a very military bearing. And the guy looked at me like, who the hell are you to ask me anything? Why are you coming over to me? So I pulled my credentials out of my pocket, and I told him that I had his job, but back in the United States. Or I was an agent by then, but I had been an inspector. So his bosses came over. They were all very friendly at that point. And you know, it turns out that their immigration people were the same people like Secret Service that protected the king and queen of the Netherlands, because they understood it was national security. But even they had a problem because they had people driving in because it was part of the European Commonwealth, European Common Market. So at the airport, they would stop people. They'd get into on an airplane. They'd fly to another country and drive across the border. The same kind of stupidity we do. Always being pressured by the globalists who want to move people around the world like chess pieces so you have cheap labor. That's what this is about, modern-day slave trade. And if you dare say this is wrong, you lack compassion. I lack compassion. I don't want to see people exploited. Think about that. And I remember this whole distinction about being a citizen or not being a citizen. Again, on my honeymoon with my first wife, we were in Amsterdam, and for anybody who's ever been there, there's lots of canals in Amsterdam. And it's funny because when people get tired of their cars, sometimes they drive them into the water, so they had to dredge the canals occasionally to recover cars and all kinds of stuff that was dumped into the canals. So we were going for a late breakfast, early brunch, and we just ate. I'm getting into my car, and the cars are parked parallel to each other but perpendicular to the canal, if you can envision that kind of parking. And as I'm getting into the car, there's a guy getting into the car right next to me. A bunch of uniformed cops approach this guy and tell him that he's under arrest, and he hauls off and belts one of the police officers in the face. I think he broke the cop's nose and knocked out a couple of his teeth. And I wasn't even thinking, you know, it was a reflex, because I was in a squad where I was averaging several arrests per week. And without thinking, I kicked the guy's legs out from under him, flipped him down on his face, jumped on his back, and yelled at the cops, somebody give me handcuffs. Just total conditioned response, because the cop that made the initial contact is bleeding from everywhere. He wound up in the hospital, actually. But instead of handing me handcuffs, because the cops had no idea who the hell I was, there was about 8 guns pointing at me. It was an Inspector Clouseau moment, if you could imagine that. And my late wife starts screaming. And the cops grab me, and they throw me up against the side of my car, and they forcefully search me. I'm all disheveled. My shirt's out of my pants. Everything is all screwed up. And they dealt with the other guy. They got him cuffed up, and they took him away. And then this guy looks at me and goes, who are you and why did you get in the middle of that? I said, calm down. I'm a federal agent back in the United States. He said, do you have anything to show me? So I took out my credentials. And the guy looked at me and he said, oh, my goodness, I'm so sorry, but you never should have gotten involved. I said, well, it was a conditioned response. Imagine if you were in the United States and you saw some guy punch a cop in the face and bloody the guy. What would you have done? He said, well, I probably would have done what you did, but you did it really well. That guy went down fast. He said, that was good. I said, practice, practice, practice. You know, that's how you get to Carnegie Hall, they say, practice, practice, practice.
Exactly.
So we got on the walkie-talkie, and the commander from that precinct or whatever it was that they referred to that district comes out, and he comes up to me. Are you Mr. Cutler? I said, yes. He said, I'm sorry, your clothing is kind of disheveled, and you are right. I said, I'm fine. I said, your guys reacted. I understand why they did. I hope you understand what I did. He said, I do. But he said, you understand you have no authority to take the action that you took. I said, don't you have something that's the equivalent of a citizen's arrest? He said, actually, we do, Mr. Cutler, but there's a small problem. But I said, what's that? He said, you're not a citizen, you're an alien. By the way, I was not offended by being told I was an alien. And the captain gave me a business card. He offered to pay for clothing or dinner. I said, I don't need either. We just had a great meal. I said, my wife is probably not going to talk to me for the next week, but I'm okay. He said, are you sure that we can't do anything for you? I said, I'm positive. He said, do me a favor. I said, okay. If you see anything else happening, don't take any action. I said, I promise you, you have my sworn word. I will take no action. I will just watch. He said, thank you. We shook hands. She was pissed. A year later, we're in Canada, right near a guy getting arrested, and she just looked at me and said, don't even think of it. I said, I'm not thinking about anything. But the point was, he was right. I was an alien. I had no right to act. Where did the word alien become offensive? It became offensive when it went against the narrative that the globalists and the crooked politicians have created. This has been a massive attempt to brainwash America. And what you're also witnessing by this whole business of don't call men men and don't call women women, and we're going to get rid of the holidays, and people say, well, we're being too polite. I heard that on Fox the other day. No, I think I really understand what they're doing. If, let's say, for argument's sake, you went back to a town where you grew up as a kid and you haven't been there in many years, and you need to go to a restaurant, forget GPS. Let's say you don't have a GPS, you don't have a smartphone. You're going to remember places based on what building is near what building, right? I want to go to McDonald's. It's three blocks to the right of City Hall. So you get to City Hall, you make a right turn, you go three blocks. What happens if they rebuilt the entire town and they built all these different buildings and put them in different places? And it's at night and you can't see the street signs. How would you find your way around?
You're not going to be able to.
That's right. I believe, and I could be wrong, but I'm always analytical, that what we're witnessing, James, I want everyone to think about this, is the removal of what I refer to as societal reference points.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Confound all of us. What do you think of that analogy?
No, that's precisely it. I like that, societal reference points, because there is, there should be a commonality. Whether you came to this country to become an American, whether you were born here or not, there is a thread that runs through this tapestry of our uniquely American culture. And what they want to do is they want to sterilize those things out of it. And then we're no longer America. I don't know what we are. We become something else.
And that's exactly right. This is the demolition crew. You want to put up a new building, but there's a building already on that piece of property. You have to demolish the building that's there first.
You have to condemn it.
This is the wrecking crew.
And that's what they're doing. They condemn, and then they destroy. They demolish.
Yes, yes. And so white privilege and white supremacists, wait a minute. First of all, I have no stomach for any supremacist of any flavor. We're all human beings. And to me, race, religion, ethnicity are superficial. Who are you as a human being? Who are you as a person? I can judge you by your actions. You know, Martin Luther King got it right, the quality of your soul, the quality of your heart, not the color of your skin. But we're going to hold white America responsible for past sins, even if our ancestors weren't here when it happened and we had nothing to do with it. So I guess by that reasoning, we ought to have the police, if there are any left, go out and round up the grandchildren of murderers and prosecute them for the murders committed by their grandparents. How does that work? Isn't that what we're doing?
Fundamentally, yeah. But then, yeah,
Why is nobody making that analogy? Why is nobody seeing that analogy? How do you hold me accountable for something that I did not do and I may have opposed? I don't know if I told you I met John Lewis.
You met who? John Lewis?
John, yes.
Okay.
Sheila Jackson Lee introduced me to him. And I was requested to go to Washington, not to testify at a hearing, but to sit in on two hearings. John Hostetler, Lamar Smith. I think Jim Sensenbrenner asked me to do this. And I worked very closely with them. You know, there was more to what I did in Washington than simply testify at the hearings. I was told I hold a record. I testified before something like 17 hearings in the House and Senate. But they would also call me up for advice, or if they were looking to change the wording in a law or look for my insight on procedural matters. And so they said, look, there's going to be a couple of hearings. We'd like you to tell us what you think about the truthfulness of the witnesses, because these are big issues. And they were. And I went down to Washington. I was very happy to do it. Also gave me an opportunity to meet with the Canadians, because I convinced them that they needed to agree with the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative so that you would need to have the equivalent of a passport to go between the two countries, because up until then you didn't need it. And so Sheila Jackson Lee, and I had testified for Sheila at two different hearings. I testified for her about the hearing that was held 6 months after 9/11 about how two of the terrorists, Mohammed Atta, the ringleader, and Marwan al-Shehhi, one of the other thugs, could have been given permission to go to flight school 6 months after 9/11. And then I convinced her when they were doing a hearing on alien smuggling to look well beyond the border. And I want to talk about that a little bit tonight before we run out of time. It's not just the Mexican border. People need to understand that. We're seeing all these safe houses along the border. There are safe houses sprinkled throughout the entire country, folks. Let me tell you. We found safe houses here on Long Island in New York. But no one's looking for them now because New York has sanctuary policies and Biden has basically gutted immigration enforcement. He's shut down interior enforcement, which to me is a bigger issue than the completion of the border wall. People don't realize it. I wrote about that both for the American Conservative and for Front Page Magazine, frontpagemag.com. And I'm now also writing for usinc.org, usinc.org. But in any event, Sheila Jackson Lee saw me at this hearing, and she said, Mr. Cutler, I'd like to introduce you to John Lewis. And this was a couple of years ago, more than a couple of years ago. This was maybe 10 years ago. And we got into a wonderful conversation. And it turned out that shortly after my mom passed away, I was 21, I had a little bit of money, and a neighbor suggested that I open up an account with Merrill Lynch. James Meredith was actually my stockbroker, and he was a real gentleman. If you remember his name, he was the first black man to go to Mississippi University. And I had dinner at his house, and he let me use his Volkswagen to learn to drive stick shift because I had a drunk plow into my car, destroy my car, and I was given an offer by my lawyer to buy his used Jag, which was a stick, so I needed to learn to drive stick. He let me use his car, but I had to pay him for it, but I did. And so when I saw John Lewis, I had mentioned Jim Meredith. He goes, my God, he's one of my closest friends. Are you kidding? How do you know Jim? And I told him. And I said, you know, I learned to drive stick shift on his Volkswagen. And he said, he lent you his car? He wouldn't lend me his car. He lent it to you? I said, no, I had to pay for it. He laughed. He said, yeah, that's Jim Meredith. And we both had a good laugh. But then we got into a discussion about civil rights. And I said, what you did to end segregation was heroic. And I said that to Jim Meredith also. It was heroic, taking an important position on a critical issue. I understand what you did, and it was a very important measure. And I know you got a lot of pushback at the time. It takes time for people to come to terms with change. We have inertia. We have inertia in politics. We have inertia about so many things. But I said, you know, it's a pleasure to meet you. I said, but you do need to know that my people, the Jewish people, were enslaved long before your people were. Go back to the Bible. And I said, and frankly, we were enslaved since. He said, what do you mean? I said, the Second World War, think of what the Germans did with the concentration camps. Everyone looks at Wernher von Braun as a hero. What he did was heroic, but the guy was a war criminal. He used slave labor to build weapons that were not used to target military facilities, but the civilian population of Great Britain, of London. The V-1 and V-2, the V-2 became was the predecessor to the Redstone rocket that Shepard and Grissom rode into a suborbital flight that lasted 15 minutes and carried them about 115 miles up. But basically, it was a reworked V-2 that they rode into space. But he used slave labor, and those weapons during the war were used to hit civilian targets as a weapon of terror. I said, so all people, irrespective of race or religion or ethnicity, should be appalled when anyone's civil rights are taken from them. And by the way, illegal aliens should not have civil rights. They should certainly have human rights, and they should have due process. But civil rights means that you are to be a full participant in the society that you live in. How can you be a full participant in a society when you shouldn't be there in the first place? It's a contradiction in thoughts. And we had this very interesting conversation. He said, you know, I never even thought about the plight of the Jews, which kind of took me aback a little bit. I said, but we all, if you dig into every culture, there have been terrible things done to everybody from everywhere at some point in time throughout the world because we are defective creatures. We are smart enough to know better and look at the damage we do. Look at what happened in England and Northern Ireland between the Protestants and the Catholics. What was that about? I mean, think back to the atrocities we commit against each other. Am I crazy, James?
No. And yeah, it wasn't just German versus Jew or European versus Jew, the white man versus the American Indian.
Unbelievable stuff.
Stuff happens all over.
And that's why you need to study history as it was written. Don't revise it. Let people see it for the ugliness that it is so they understand what happened. Otherwise, how could you explain it to anybody? And I said, and by the way, I think the KKK is more fearful about me than they are you. And he said, why is that? I said, you're obviously black. Me? To the KKK, I'm an undercover black man. You know that both he and Sheila Jackson Lee
they don't know
over
who you,
laughing in the hearing
They don't
room.
Know what you... That's good.
True story. Why did I say that to him? Besides wanting to tell a joke, I don't tell jokes. It's about a lesson. It's a teachable moment. Because I want everyone to look at their neighbors and look for what makes us most similar, not what makes us most different. This divide and conquer strategy is destroying America. It's destroying American lives. Lincoln was right when he said a house divided against itself will not stand. We're being divided against each other by America's enemies, and we're drinking the Kool-Aid being prepared for us by Iran, China, and Russia. Does it get any dumber than that? Tell me.
Only if you have Joe Biden as president of the United States.
And Kamala Hyena as the vice president.
Oh, God.
But you see, look at what's happening. These journalists are finally waking up and saying, you know, we can't keep this under, we can't sweep this under the carpet anymore. And I'm telling you, to read Time magazine, write about how Iran interfered with the election and how Iran tried to make the right-wing groups look worse than they were to create more division and more violence. Holy smoke. Holy smoke. That's what journalists are supposed to do, folks. Dig beyond the headlines. Figure out who, what, where, when, why, and how. No one's asking who, what, where, when, why, and how. We've got to start to ask those questions.
They don't have to, Mike, because the news is formulated. It's manufactured. It is a product. They already have the answers to all their narratives when they put all this stuff together. You're absolutely right. The traditional, historically authentic, accurate journalist would be asking those questions. That's what they told us on the high school paper. And you're right.
That's right.
But these guys, this is product. It's manufactured. They already have those questions answered.
This is the ministry.
Yeah.
This is the ministry of truth.
Exactly.
This is right out of the ministry of truth. And so going back to what I had started to say, where are the Republicans to say to Joe Biden, you know, Nancy Pelosi is jumping up and down, and she's screaming about the 9/11 Commission report. Okay, so let's think about the 9/11 Commission report, because obviously you hold it in esteem or you wouldn't be asking us to do something similar because you're concerned about what happened on January 6th. So let's look at what the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel had to say. Now, that report was written by the federal agents and prosecutors who were assigned to work for the 9/11 Commission. This report was published by the U.S. Government Printing Office. It's an official report. You can consider it a companion report to the 9/11 Commission report. So the preface of the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel starts out, you're going to love this, it is perhaps obvious to state that terrorists cannot plan and carry out attacks in the United States if they're unable to enter the country. That prior to September 11, while there were efforts to enhance border security, no agency of the U.S. government thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. Indeed, even after 19 hijackers demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa and gaining admission into the United States, border security still is not considered a cornerstone of national security policy. We believe for reasons, pardon me, that we discuss in the following pages that it must be made one. It goes on and makes a couple of interesting observations. Let me see where we want to go with this. Okay, so then it goes on and says this. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. Mahmoud Abu Alima, involved in both the World Trade Center and Landmark plots, received temporary residence under the Seasonal Agriculture Worker Program after falsely claiming he picked beans in Florida. By the way, Joe Biden wants to revive that program, too, in his amnesty, according to his address to Congress, right? Mohammed Salameh, who rented the truck used in the bombing, overstayed his tourist visa. He then applied for permanent residency under the Agriculture Worker Program, but was rejected. He had Mahmoud Ismail, who drove the van containing the bomb, took English language classes at Wichita State University in Kansas on a student visa. He dropped out, but remained in the United States out of status. So think about it. Sanctuary states are giving driver's licenses to illegal aliens. The aliens who carried out the 93 bombing at the Trade Center were both illegal aliens. They were status violators. How is that happening? Why didn't Trump raise that during the debate? This is where I would have gone with all of this had I been Donald Trump. And then it goes on, exploring the link between human smugglers and terrorists. All right, this is on page 61. In July 2001, the CIA warned of a possible link between human smugglers and terrorist groups, including Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Egyptian Islamic Jihad. Indeed, there is evidence to suggest that since 1999, human smugglers have facilitated the travel of terrorists associated with more than a dozen extremist groups. With their global reach and connections to fraudulent document vendors and corrupt government officials, human smugglers clearly have the, quote, credentials, unquote, necessary to aid terrorist travel. Again, the nexus between immigration and what? Terrorism. We're not hearing that, but Pelosi keeps talking about the 9/11 Commission report. Then we get to page 98 on that same report. This was under the subtitle of Immigration Benefits. By the way, the very first hearing where I testified before Congress was back on May 20th, 1997, on the issue of visa fraud and immigration benefit fraud because of the 93 attacks. The shooting at the CIA by Kansi, a Pakistani who had applied for asylum, bought into a courier van service, again, a motor vehicle used as part of the attack, and then the bombing at the Trade Center a month later. That was my first hearing before the House Immigration Subcommittee, 97. 4.5 years before the attacks of 9/11. But to go back to this report, here's what they said about immigration benefits. And Joe Biden wants to legalize tens of millions of illegal aliens. Stop and think about it. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11th hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, or applying for asylum after entry. These people are all applying for asylum, overwhelming the system so nobody can really adjudicate those applications properly, right? As a result, this can be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status. By the way, that's what DACA was, temporary worker status, or applying for asylum after entering. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. That's exactly what's happened. That's why Trump said had the remain in Mexico policy. Biden says, come in, say political asylum, we'll drive you to the bus terminal. They're headed to the rest of the country. Forget the border, folks. They're in your town. I don't care where you live. Right?
Absolutely. So, yeah, it's everywhere.
Permitting the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists. I'll say it again. Were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. And what are we doing? Taking hundreds of thousands of aliens whose identities cannot be determined, shipping them throughout the country where they are embedding themselves, and now we're telling the immigration agents you can't arrest anybody, even if there's an order of deportation, unless they also have a rap sheet with serious convictions. If all you have is a warrant of deportation signed by an immigration judge and you arrest that alien, I promise you, those agents are in a world of hurt. What we have done is exactly what Hamas, Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda, ISIS had dreams about. And in fact, the terrorists had a letter on them that was found because one of the suitcases didn't make it onto the airplane, where I believe it was Muhammad Atta, the ringleader, was a prayer to Allah, please open all the doors for me. Joe Biden has opened all the doors. I want everyone to stop and understand the enormity of what I just said. And as Iran races to that nuclear weapon, who's to say that they won't try to bring a nuclear weapon into the United States?
Who's to say it's not already here?
Or that they won't take actions of a conventional nature to go after us if we try to interfere with their nuclear program. We allow this to happen.
Mike, if they can go to flight school, they can go to tractor trailer driving school.
Yes, absolutely. And that's the whole point.
If they've got a driver's license.
And don't be smug and say, well, I live in Utah. We'd never allow it. Because I can go to Utah or Wyoming with a New York license and rent a car or a truck or whatever. Think about that. This endangers the entire United States of America, and I can't ever get it out of my head. Why did they connect the dots? All these wacko politicians standing in front of the microphones and standing in front of the cameras, pounding the podium. Why did they connect the dots? Folks, I just connected the dots. These dots were connected almost 20 years ago. This coming September will mark the 20th anniversary of 9/11. Now, that's an interesting anniversary because it means that there is an entire generation of American voters who have absolutely zero recollection of 9/11. They probably know more about Pearl Harbor than 9/11. And the American people have been sold a lie. And if you dare suggest that you are creating a nightmare where we could wake up to a reality of a nuclear weapon or a dirty bomb or a biological attack being carried out by aliens that were permitted to enter the country by our own government, I want someone to explain to me how and why this is being done and how and why we're being intimidated and told, don't you dare question your government. If you're not allowed to question your government, you're not living in a free country, but in an authoritarian, fascist state. Understand what I'm saying to you. We never wanted to take immigration seriously. I sat in that inspector in that booth as an inspector, and we had bosses that would sit behind you with a stopwatch. And they would say to me, Mr. Cutler, you're averaging 1 minute and 10 seconds. We need it down to less than 1 minute per passenger. And Mr. Cutler, you're sending too many people to secondary. Resolve the problem in the booth. How? Limit the guy to 3 weeks. 3 weeks, the guy wants 3 minutes on the other side of the door. He's wearing running shoes. You didn't want to take it seriously. We had the attacks in the United States in 93, and the Clinton administration implemented CUSA, Citizenship USA. We naturalized 1.1 million aliens frequently before fingerprints even came back. Then we had 9/11. And George W. Bush, this is why he hates my guts, and I'm so proud of it. It makes my day. Every day I think about it and I giggle. Because when he created the Department of Homeland Surrender, as I call DHS, he was in violation of the Homeland Security Act. And who pushed that issue? John Hostetler, who was the Republican chairman of the House Immigration Subcommittee, They subsequently defunded his campaign. Was it because of this? I don't know, but it's interesting. And Jim Sensenbrenner was another big fan of mine and me of him. Because every time Bush said something stupid, and being Alfred E. Newman, it didn't take much of a wait, my phone would ring and they'd say, there's going to be a hearing next Thursday. Do you want to come down? That's how I did so many hearings. And I remember that I had just testified before Congress and I wrote some articles and they said that immigration agents not only should be getting language training in Spanish language, but Arabic, Farsi, Urdu, and other strategic languages. And that was the phrase in my congressional testimony. I'm pretty sure that's exactly how I put it. I haven't looked at it in a number of years. But what was interesting was I got a call from one of the networks. Back then I was on all these networks as a matter of routine, MSNBC, CNN, ABC, Fox News. And I think it was MSNBC said, can you come down and do an interview? Now I have a routine. If I know I'm going to be on TV, by the way, folks, tomorrow at about 11 o'clock East Coast time, I'm going to be on Newsmax. And the cool thing about Newsmax, to their credit, unlike so many networks where they do a pre-interview and if they don't like what they hear, they all say the same thing. They read off the same cheat sheet. Oh, Mr. Cutler, that's interesting, but I think we're going in a different direction tomorrow. Really? Going to the North Pole? What do you mean a different direction? And you get uninvited. What Lou Dobbs used to do when he was at CNN, I could call them up and say, I'd like to come on the program and talk about such and such, and they'd say, great. Well, what Newsmax does, and I think this is my fourth interview in like 3 weeks or something. I've been doing a lot for Newsmax, which pleases me, and they are growing in the ratings, which means they're reaching more people, which is good. What do you want to talk about, Mike? I said, okay. And I said, I want to talk about how Biden has turned America into a sanctuary country. And they said, great. You'll have between 8 and 10 minutes. So no censorship there, but there is censorship when they do the pre-interview. Understand the way the game gets played. So what we really need to understand is how dangerous all of this is because we're being lied to by everybody, all the globalists who have a piece of the action. And the American people have no idea what's true, what's false, what to believe. The language that is used is designed to obfuscate the truth. It's all newspeak. It's all Orwellian. It's all Orwellian. But we all know that we are being left open to terror attacks, to fugitives from justice, to criminals, to sex offenders, and nobody is holding anybody truly accountable. What the Republicans should be doing is what John Hostetler did. He had me come in. And what Bush did that was so horrible, and I think I told you about it the last time I was on, he took immigration and split it into Customs and Border Protection and ICE. That's not what the law called for. It was supposed to be a unified agency, seamless. I worked with them on this. And they were never supposed to fold other agencies in with immigration. Immigration and customs enforcement. Customs has nothing to do with immigration. Customs was a revenue agency. It was about duties and tariffs and keeping out narcotics. It has nothing to do with people. And then if you look at what goes on at the airport, they've added agriculture to customs and border protection. I've testified at hearings about this. And then Bush never hired the people he was authorized to hire. Sheila Jackson Lee took him to task over it at a hearing when we were looking at the resources. Congress gave Bush, George W., enough money to hire 800 new ICE agents. They gave him enough money to hire 2,000 Border Patrol agents for that year and the next 4 years. They gave him enough money to acquire 8,000 detention beds. George W. Bush came along with his chainsaw, and he whacked the numbers way down. 800 ICE agents became 143. I'll never forget it. 2,000 Border Patrol agents became 210, and 8,000 detention spaces became somewhere around 1,900. Jackson Lee said, I think that the president is testing us to see if we could really demand to do what needs to be done. Lamar Smith was furious. Lamar Smith, again, a Republican, said that what the president, what the administration gave the American people was the equivalent of two candles instead of one candle at a blackout. I'll never forget that analogy. Both parties have done this to us because both parties want the bribes I did it again. The campaign contributions, when they do it, please, someone raise your hand and I'll be careful. Okay? They want those campaign contributions. And they know they've got to do the bidding of their employer, the lobbyists. They don't care that people are dying. It's collateral damage, I promise you. Collateral damage. The military spends gazillions of dollars on brilliant technology, precision weaponry, so we could send a cruise missile through the second window from the left on the fifth floor of a 12-story building. Unbelievable technology after flying 1,000 miles. But when people are killed in shootouts or by gangs, collateral damage. Stuff happens. What are you worried about? Are you against immigrants, Mr. Cutler? Are you a xenophobe? Or is Arlen Specter at a hearing, the late, not-so-great Arlen Specter? There are some people who suffer from exophobia. And then he corrected himself and said xenophobia. And I almost fell out of my chair. I said, this idiot thinks that I'm afraid of the letter X, perhaps. Exophobia. You can't make this up. But there's real-world consequences. And now there's talk about this horrible drought because of climate change all over the west coast of the United States. And they're going to have to ration the water, even as we're bringing in millions of more people who need water. Are you crazy? We're having a food shortage. Bring more people to the party. What? Have you lost your mind? I want someone to explain this. If you're telling the American people that we have a drought because of climate change, and as a consequence, we're going to have to tighten up on the use of water, why in the world would you bring more people to that party? Why is no one asking that question?
Well, you know, clearly, Mike, it transcends fecklessness. It transcends ineptitude. There is an intent here. What I call failure by design. And what's
failure
the motivator for that failure?
God only knows, but someone needs to make these bums accountable, and we need
to do that. Benefits
that's the work
the most
Americans
from that failure.
Do.
Exactly. And if we look at it that way, then you're right. You know, we got all this goes back to the globalists because those are the people who are going to benefit from this, from this sterilization, this emasculating of America's economic engine.
And the American people. That's why they're talking about toxic masculinity. Toxic masculinity defeated the Nazis, the real Nazis.
Toxic masculinity
got us to the moon. Toxic masculinity built society. We're all going to walk around not knowing how to use a urinal. Are you kidding me? Look,
ridiculous.
I don't care what anyone's sexual preference is. I'm a New Yorker. I've seen it all, I promise you. I don't care. But if you want me to respect your right to do what you want to do in private with other consenting adults, then by golly, you ought to be willing to respect my right to not participate in those activities. What do you think of that?
It's a very libertarian attitude.
Terrible person that I am.
We've only got a few minutes left, Mike. Can you tell us where can we get more of the Michael Cutler vibe?
Well, I do my program on Friday nights. It's called the Michael Cutler Hour.
Yeah.
It's on Blog Talk Radio. I write for Front Page Magazine, frontpagemag.com. My own website is obviously my favorite. It's kind of bare bones, but I'm a dinosaur. I'm a techno dinosaur at my age. It's michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. I'm also now writing for U.S. Incorporated, usinc.org, and I have some articles posted at the American Conservative. But if this fires you up, I don't want you to just, walk away from the computer and say, well, Cutler was interesting. He might be a little crazy, but what the hey. I want you to act. I want you to talk to your kids, to your neighbors, to your friends. Have disagreements. It's cool. We're allowed to disagree. I would love to see Veterans Day, Memorial Day, and the 4th of July declared days of national discourse and debate. I urge you to disagree with your neighbors peaceably, thoughtfully, and respectfully, but we should disagree when we disagree without being concerned that we're going to hurt someone's fragile snowflake egos or whatever. We're not that fragile. We are Americans, and we should be damn proud of who we are. And we should have the spine to stand up to those of us who want to intimidate us, and tell them where they could take their sidewalk act. What do you think of that?
Exactly. And those days all should be days also of remembrance and of thanksgiving.
Oh, absolutely. But that's what they fought for. That's what they died for. That's why they came home badly hurt, defending our freedom of speech that these Nimrods are trying to take from us. Freedom of speech means freedom of thought, which means freedom, period.
We have been talking with our good friend Michael Cutler. Oh, speaking of Front Page Magazine, you know, that is one of my go-to sources and has been for a long time on things being what they are. On July 6th, I'm going to be talking with David Horowitz. He's going to be kind enough to be on the program.
Tell him send my best regards. The guy is dynamite.
Yeah,
tell David I want to be like him when I grow up, but I don't plan to ever grow up.
I'm looking forward to it. You know, that place and of course discovering the networks, the work that he has done in assembling the contributors to Front Page Mag and also the background, that's a never ending process is what he's done with Discover the Networks.
Yes.
And if you want to know what's
yes.
going on and if you want to get into the weeds, I don't think there's anybody, I would, between you two guys, I'd be hard-pressed to pick who I'd go with.
Well, it's a compliment, but David is amazing, and I'm honored and very proud that I've been writing for him, I think it's since 2014, if I'm not mistaken. Long time.
And I'm excited about it. Michael, I want to thank you once again, as always. Tremendous conversation, whether we're on the air, whether we're off the air, it doesn't really matter. Folks, I can promise you, you're getting your money's worth. You're getting your money's worth because I talk to this guy regularly, and if there's anybody who knows it, he just spent a couple hours with us. And thanks again, Michael. Looking forward
My
to
pleasure.
Having you back
Thank
here
you
just as soon
me.
As again.
Oh, absolutely.
Our pleasure.
Stay well, be safe, and please remember, democracy is not a spectator sport, folks. We'll see you soon.
Absolutely, it is not. God bless you, Michael. Be well, and we'll be talking to you very, very soon.
Absolutely. Thank you again.
What a terrific guy. I enjoy having him come on every single time, and we got in a little early, too. That's excellent. Okay, well, that's always a treat. Terrific dude. And like I said, you know, when I watched him on that webinar, and he's looking into the webcam, and he is doing his thing, and lightning fast. That is a facile mind up there in that big old Brooklyn skull. Thank you so much for being here with us. I appreciate tremendously the opportunity. Thank you, Penelope, to the opportunity to get to do this with you. In all likelihood, probably Thursday. I'm not doing anything tomorrow night, and then there's always Friday, so. Yeah, I'm going to be around. Not exactly sure when or where, but I'll make the scene. It's just going to be one of those kind of weeks. Thank you so much. Once again, James Mostick here with Conservative Perspective. We'll see you the next time we see you, and we'll be taking a look at things. Thank you, Penelope, as we do through a Conservative Perspective. God bless you. God bless America. And we'll see you next time.